This is At Home Connecticut, hosted by Joey Burgoyne, highlighting events and happenings that are taking place in your home, Connecticut, on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of At Home in Connecticut. I'm your host, Joey Burgoyne, and I've spoken about this in the past. We've talked about it. The one thing that hasn't shut down is the outdoors. We've talked to the Connecticut Forest and Park Association, and one of the things you'll notice when you're outdoors, it varies season to season, but you hear the wildlife, and one thing you hear is the birds. And I will admit, over this past summer, we were at our campground a lot. I became fascinated, to an unhealthy degree, according to my wife, with hummingbirds. Hummingbirds are kind of out of the question this time of the year. But joining me this morning is Patrick Cummins, the executive director of the Connecticut Audubon Society. Thank you for joining me this morning, sir. Just give me a quick history of the 50,000 foot, the way the pigeon flies history of the Audubon Society, sir, in Connecticut.
Sure. We were formed in 1898. Because of the outrage of the unregulated hunting of birds back then. There were birds going extinct. There was all sorts of market gunning going on. The passenger pigeon was really heading towards extinction at that time. And these various Audubon societies popped up in states around the Northeast primarily. And then some of us stayed independent, whereas other Audubon societies joined up to become the National Audubon Society. So we're an independent organization that's more than 120 years old now, 122 years old, and we work to conserve the nature of Connecticut, for birds, other wildlife, and their habitats for the benefit of our residents as well.
And that's one thing we think, we're in Connecticut. How many, you probably can't give an exact answer, but how many rough species of birds are there in our tiny little state?
Somewhere in the 430 range. It keeps on growing. This year, we added at least two species to the state list with a Townsend's warbler, which actually we ended up with two of those, and a Pacific golden plover. It was the first record of one of those in Connecticut, and that was about a month or so ago.
Now, how do you get, if I'm going out with the family and we're looking, we're hiking through the trails, and like you said, we'll get to that. A lot of your trails are, none of the trails really closed. You just kind of had to let everyone know, be a little more conscious when you're out on the trail. But if I'm out with my family and I see a bird, what's a good way, or how do I get to have my kids and me start to identify these different types of birds?
Well, you can get binoculars are really coming down in price. You can get, decent quality optics these days. And we do sell, mid to high grade optics at the Connecticut Audubon Society through our Eco Travel program. So get observing the bird and really noticing the details about it is how you go about learning the birds. And you get to know a few species. And you know something's different. You can recognize a robin, you can recognize a cardinal, you can recognize a blue jay, and then all of a sudden you see this little brown bird, and maybe you can figure out it's a sparrow. So you just you take note. Oh, does it have white? Where does it have white on it? Where does it have yellow on it? Does it have streaks on the breast? And then you can check a field guide and see what bird most closely matches what you saw. There's other ways. Other little tricks too, getting to know what birds are going to be seen in Connecticut when, is helpful too. It helps you narrow your list of what to expect when you see something out in the field. Birds are fascinating, and people are really starting to notice birds more. I think it's with so many people working from home and they were working out on their decks and hearing the birds and seeing scarlet tanagers in their oak trees and seeing rose-breasted grosbeaks at their feeders. And these birds were always there. They just didn't notice them.
Mm-hmm. That was one thing when I was talking with Jerry Griswold a while back. She's up at White Memorial, also does our traffic during the weekdays. But we were talking about that, and it was a great comment, and I wish more people understood this, that, like you said, more people are working from home. They're understanding these things. People, the party in your backyard has always been going on. You just haven't been home to notice it.
Right.
You know, and, yeah. and that was the, we were at our campground a lot more this summer. The kids were, you know, distance learning. I was distance working. And I was like, you know what? We have the hummingbird feeder in the shed. I might as well put it up. And then a couple weeks, one hummingbird comes. I was like, oh, okay, that one's kind of neat. And then, wait, that's not the same one that was here. So then you, it's I don't want to say it's addicting, but it's very fascinating to me to learn. And I mean, one thing, Connecticut, we always get the big, I don't want to say the hype or the addiction when it comes through, is the bald eagle. Yes, it's a, it's our nation's bird. But, you know, what would you, in your mind, what bird is in this state that kind of goes under the radar that you would like more people to know and keep an eye out for?
Interesting. semi-palmated sandpipers. They're only here a few weeks a year, but Connecticut plays a hugely important role for them. And we support tens, if not hundreds of thousands of them in migration every year. And they winter in South America, and they fly nonstop. They're smaller than a robin. They're like sparrow-sized birds. They fly nonstop from Suriname and the north coast of South America to our marshes and beaches and you know, a few inland ponds and such in the springtime. And so they're exhausted when they get here, and they have to fatten up, and they stay around for a few days to a week or so, and then they fly again nonstop up to Hudson Bay in Canada, fatten up again, and then fly up, you know, even further into the Arctic and, you know, northwestern Canada and Alaska. And then again, they do that same thing over and over again with these long hops from Alaska to Hudson's Bay to the shore of Connecticut, then to South America. So even though we have this bird that only for maybe 3 weeks in the spring and 4 weeks in the fall, maybe a little more on both ends, Connecticut plays a critical role in its survival, because if it wasn't for our Long Island, you know, the healthy habitat of Long Island Sound, these birds would not survive their long, perilous migratory journeys.
And is that something where Connecticut kind of goes unnoticed too, where are we like a major, sounds weird, major hub for air activity for the birds?
Yes. Billions of birds likely pass over Connecticut annually. And you can actually see them on the radar. If you get an unfiltered radar, the National Weather Service Mosaic shows it usually. At night, during spring and fall, you'll start to see these blue blobs on the radar screen that then will contract come dawn, and those are actually the birds flying overhead. And you can go out, you can predict what weather the birds will be coming in, so you know when to expect them. Then you see them on the radar, then you can actually go outside and hear them flying over. And some people can even identify what kinds of birds are flying over when they are. It's really neat going outside in your yard at night in May, and you know, I've had shorebirds fly over, like yellowlegs, and cuckoos flying over, and all sorts of interesting things. I've had screech owls calling in my suburban neighborhood. It's birds are all around us, and they're really fascinating creatures.
And you touched on this a little bit, the eco travel. Let's get into that a little bit more. What is that, and how can someone participate?
Sure. We have an eco travel office in Essex. And we organize trips both with groups or charter, if you will. You can charter a special trip if you'd like, either locally or anywhere in the world. But we're going to Tanzania in February of next year with a group. It's actually sold out, and we're going to be posting another trip there. We've led trips to Iceland. Obviously, we're not doing much international travel right now, but we still are doing, regional trips, and we're planning for the future, hoping that, travel will become safer in the coming months. And people are signing up now, for the trips in the fall in expectation of things opening up. We also run things like eagle and swallow cruises along the Connecticut River. And then we have environmental education centers also scattered around the state, one in Old Lyme, one in Pomfret. We have an education office that works out of the greater Hartford area. We have two centers in Fairfield, one in Milford, and one in Sherman. So and we have more than 20 nature sanctuaries around Connecticut, comprising 3,300 acres of some of the most spectacular habitats in the state. And Connecticut just really is an amazing place for nature.
If I want to put out bird feeders this time of the year, we're mid-January, the weather's a little weird, it's usually much cooler this time of the year, but if I want to put out a bird feeder to help the birds either migrate or just sustain the winter, what should I be doing food-wise and safety-wise?
Yes, that really depends on where you live. You know, if you're in bear country, you have to be a little bit more careful. Make sure that you wait to put out certain types of bird food until after the bears are safely hibernating. You don't want to attract them into suburban areas. But bird feeding, all of our feeder birds are doing well population-wise, so it's probably beneficial to the birds, but it's also really beneficial to us because these fascinating creatures that actually come into our yards, and some will show up just, you know, maybe for a couple of days in the course of a year. You know, you may have a rose-breasted grosbeak or a indigo bunting visiting your feeder, or this winter you may end up having a flock of red poles or evening grosbeaks visiting your feeder that, you know, haven't been in Connecticut for you know, like 8 to 10 years. Bird feeding and landscaping for birds, I could go on for days about that. But providing water is one way that you can help out the birds, and especially if you can do it, have liquid water in the winter and fresh water in the drought times of summer. The best general food to start with are probably sunflower seeds, again, unless it's bear country. That's the seed that most species of birds like. And then, you know, eventually you can do all sorts of different things because different types of birds feed at different heights. So you can have feeders that are high up that might attract your finches and the chickadees. And you might have feeders close to the ground for the ground feeders like the juncos and the towhees and the white-throated sparrows.
Never thought of height as an issue.
Yeah. And, you know, there are things you can do to enjoy the birds in the summertime when, you know, even if you're in bear country, there's all sorts of landscaping techniques that you can use to make your yard more wildlife friendly and have interesting butterflies that visit your yard and interesting birds stopping by your yard in migration and interesting birds that nest in your neighborhood. And no matter where you are in Connecticut, there are interesting birds and other critters like butterflies around us everywhere.
And, you know, that's one thing. Another thing that people don't realize is the birds also kind of take care of the nuisance insects. So it's not a bad thing to have a little flock of birds that kind of visit your yard every once in a while.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's what's known as ecosystem services. And, you know, they've calculated the value of insect control of our wild birds is just, it's in the billions of dollars, you know, in terms of eating mosquitoes, eating pest insects. You know, our birds are mostly insectivores, and there are billions of them in North America. And there have been places like I think it's Guam where the brown tree snake got in there, and all of the native birds became extinct. Suddenly, the forests were like these haunted castles with spiders everywhere. You couldn't walk through the forest without just being completely covered in spider webs because there were no birds left to eat the spiders, and the spiders really increased their population in response. Birds are really fascinating creatures. They're unique. There's so much variety that are, you know, as diverse as say a whale is to a mouse to a deer. And it's all in our, all right in our backyards. You know, we have interesting seabirds in Long Island Sound, terns that nest there, and gulls that winter there. And yeah, as you mentioned, there's bald eagles. You can see a bald eagle pretty much anywhere, anytime in Connecticut. They've recovered so completely since the problems they had after World War II.
And I think that's an amazing place to end. You know, things will survive and thrive. Everything adapts. People have adapted during this whole COVID pandemic. if it's getting outside and listening to the birds a little bit more, that's a silver lining. I'll accept for that. Joining me this morning again, Patrick Holman's the executive director of the Connecticut Audubon Society. And like you said, sir, there's birds from one end of the state to the other, the coast to the mountains. There's so many things going on in Connecticut. I hope everyone gets outside, grab the family, go outside and just listen to the birds. Because remember, great things happen at home in Connecticut.
You've been listening to At Home in Connecticut, a public service project produced by WTIC News Talk 1080.